I should explain before I start what I mean, or how I'm interpreting old inns. I know the book and the listers are old inns, but then they're not in my talk. I'm using the word old to mean used to be, no longer. So it's old in that sense. Former inns. Old inns of the Yorkshire Dales sounds better than former inns of the Yorkshire Dales. And it's very much, as I've said there, an introductory look. And a lot of it is going to be looking at theoretical aspects, is the wrong way of putting it, but looking at some of the history of inns in general. What different types of public houses have there been through time? How did they differ? Why did they appear? Who did they attract? Who did they appeal to? How have, inns, pubs, whatever you want to call them, changed over the centuries? And then at the end, hopefully if I get there, is to look at some examples from within the Dales. Most of the ones I've taken are actually from Craven, but I've got a few from a bit further afield. So that's how I want to structure this talk. It's not one of my serious research aims, it's just for me a bit of light relief. And I've got no idea what got me into it, to be honest, because hardly a drop of beer passes my lips from one Christmas to the next. So, the first three figures there, 1900 to 2000, that's the number of drinking establishments, pubs, inns, whatever you want to call them, in England and Wales. And, we hear, don't we, of the number of pubs closing down. But if you look at that 1900 and the year 2000, the number was more or less the same. Mm-hmm. It went down and came back up again. 1960 there was just about the low point. But in the last decade, in this century, on average, 39 pubs, 2008-2009, 39 pubs on average across England and Wales were shutting down, which had increased by 2009 to 52 a week. And in that year, 2,500 pubs across the country closed down. So that by January 2 years ago, across the whole of England and Wales, there were 55,000. Now, if you divide 55,000 by 2,500, in the year 2030, there'll be one pub left in this country. Will it be in Malham?
Probably.
But if you... I looked for 1917, I think it was, at how many drinking establishments there were in Settle, which is where I live. And I can't remember what the number was, something like 17 or 18. If you go around Settle now and count up the number of drinking establishments, there's just about the same number. Okay, there's only two pubs, but there's restaurants and there's cafes and there's booths and there's the spa and there's the co-op and there's the park bench and there's the Kiss Millennium shelter there. They're all drinking establishments. There's about the same number of opportunities to get sloshed. Now, the three most regularly used terms in public house and pub. The first two sentences there, those are the definitions and the differences between the technical definitions between an inn and a public house, or a pub, which while Napoleon was attacking Moscow and somebody else was writing overtures, people were deciding that it was better to call a public house a pub. So the difference basically is lodging and entertainment makes it an inn, or made it an inn. Now, if you go to Clapham, there's the new Inn Hotel. It can't be an inn and a hotel. And elsewhere you find there's something Inn Tavern, or there's something Tavern Inn. Well, it can't be both. So the names have got confused in later times. A public house was just a place that sold booze to be consumed on the premises. And the dates there, the first instance I've come across the use of the word inn was in 1400 and something, and for public house, 1669. Which, when I found that date, rather surprised me. I thought public house would be sort of Industrial Revolution type term, but no. What did they sell? Ale, and latterly beer. Ale was went out of fashion, just as, in the 80s, was it, 90s? Lager started taking over from beer in this country. Ale was often flavoured with hyssop, and that photo there is a photograph of hyssop. And if you think that photo is blurred, because when I took that picture, I'd had about 6 pints. Beer, the difference between beer and ale, basically, they've both got the water, they've both got the malt. Beer has hops. Ale did not have hops. So it took 300 years from hops being introduced in the 14th century to ale actually virtually disappearing. Because what we call ale now is beer. And that long game at the bottom, La Rochefoucauld, who was a French aristocrat, he was only about 19, he came over here with his younger brother on the Grand Tour and went, started off in Suffolk and went all over the sort of south and east of the country, making detailed notes, kept a very detailed diary. And he put that in his diary. The everyday beverage is beer, of which there are 5 or 6 sorts. The best known is small beer. You know what small beer is? It's beer that's been watered down. So kids, you know, kids would drink small beer because it was really watered down. And in the reign of Henry VI, Humulus Lupulus was banned. And the reason for banning it in the law, the charter, not the charter, the law banned it, called it a wicked weed. And Humulus Lupulus, of course, is hops. And lupulus, if you know your Latin, is wolf-like. And it was Pliny the Elder, or Pliny the Younger, I don't know, but it's Pliny who described hops as being wolf-like, apparently. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. So that was imposed by Henry VI, and then Henry VIII lifted the ban, but not for use in ale. Because, and again, it's in the statute, that's the word I was looking for, hops dries up the body and increases melancholy. Now, ladies, you'll be familiar when your husbands come home from the pub late at night and they're looking really miserable and sad, it's because it's the hops. In how far back in this country do inns as such go, other than, you know, the 14th century thing I said earlier? The Romans had 2 kinds of drinking establishment, divisoria and tavernae. Tavernae, from which obviously we get the word tavern, had drink and accommodation. So that was really the inn. The divisoria was really their equivalent to the alehouse. Getting to Anglo-Saxon times, and they had 4 kinds of drinking establishment. The first 3 are pretty obvious, aren't they, what they mean? And for our little friend up here, alehouse, aolhus, beorhus, winhus, alehouse, beerhouse, and winehouse, and the cumanhus, which was the equivalent of the tavernae later in. So they go back a long way. There's nothing new about people getting drunk on a Friday and a Saturday night in our town centres or wherever. Those are the different types of drinking establishments, inns, pubs, whatever you want to call them, that there have been in this country. Some of those you'll be well aware of, be familiar with. 1 or 2 maybe you think, what's that? Or what was that? Possibly number 3 and number 4. you might not be familiar with those. I'm going to come through them all. Tiffling house was an actual term that was used. And it's where people went and didn't drink ale or beer later on. They drank, you know, small stuff. Gin and that kind of thing, spirits, yeah. A spittle, that's the definition of a spittle. What word do we get from spittle?
Hospital.
A building normally maintained by a monastic house to provide succour and care, often sited on distant properties. Now, if you, I'm sure you know Littondale, and just up from Lytton, on the other side of the river, there's a couple of barns in a rather sad state called Spittlecroft. It's spelled differently, but that could well have been a Fountains Abbey spittle originally. I just noticed the other week, driving on the A65 towards Kendal, when you've gone past Kirby Lonsdale, past the BP garage, and you get into all those bends, another bad bend, where there's a lot of work going on at the moment on pipeline or something, I don't know. There's a farm right on the traffic lights, right on the bend. Mm. And as you notice, the sign looks called Spittle Farm. Spittle as in Spittle. So halfway between Kirby Lonsdale and Kendal, roughly. So presumably that started as Spittle as well. Some catered for pilgrims, some catered for, you know, we're looking after lepers. And one which allegedly was a Spittle that was looking after lepers was that one. You've got the Red Lion there, which is supposed to be the oldest, but it is a really old pub. And this one, Pine Valley, which was the Thanet's Arms, that combined plot was a Spittle going back into, you know, back into medieval times, late medieval times, allegedly, for the benefit of the lepers. I suppose if it was serving lepers, nobody else would go in. And another one, not too far from here, which may well have been a Spittle, is that one there, Linger House, which certainly has some kind of, I mean, it's at a crossroads of old roads. It certainly had some kind of.
Where's that?
It's if you go on the road to Bordley from Hetton, and right at the very end, Tower End, you drop down the steep hill, Tower End, and it's just there, and you've got this beautiful little bridge with the wall going across the bridge. And then the old track that goes up here, past Lane Head, over to Bosmore. An ale house, there's a definition of an ale house. Any house, any private house that sold ale. And once beer came in, any private house that sold any ale, beer, whatever. And they were very often run by widows. One of the things that widows, one of the jobs that widows could do legally and maintain their sort of social status and earn some money to keep themselves going once hubby had disappeared, died. And a ruling in 1594 of the Privy Council actually laid out that widows could run ale houses if they met that description. There must be an honest conversation. Is your wife of honest conversation, Robin?
He's not a widow yet.
What that means of honest conversation was me if she wasn't a gossip. That was an alehouse. Hell, you wouldn't believe it now. This is the road going from. You go past Threshfield Quarry, turn right at the crossroads, going up as if you're going up to Bordley, and it's just a couple of hundred metres up from the little crossroads after Skythorne. Yeah. It's obviously been much changed, but that. It was recorded in sometime in the 19th century as having been an alehouse. But it's on a previous important road from Wharfdale over the top by Malham Tarn, whatever, over to Ribblesdale.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
Who made the ale? Did they
themselves?
They made them themselves.
They made themselves on the on the premises.
Okay.
Yeah. How to distinguish an ale house from a tavern? And a tavern, again, is another term that was used. That's from the 16th century. When I sort of looked at this the other night when I was putting this together, I don't know why it came into my mind, but I thought, yeah, Dennis Skinner. Whereas a tavern, if you went in a tavern, you're a better class of drunk. Better class of drunk. What immediately came to my mind there, and again I have no idea why, was George Osborne. It's quite a nice way of putting it, isn't it? Get drunk decent. Polite. Now, a hedge ale house, and try saying that after two or three pints. That's the definition of a hedge ale house. It's a very simple house in a remote area, on a park horse track, on a drove route or whatever. right out in the sticks, where people would get a bed or a doss, and that is supposed to be the origin of the word doss. You actually went and you paid, I don't know, a couple of groats or whatever, a few pence for a doss. A bit of basic food and just a doss. No bed, just a doss. On the hay, on the straw, whatever. And a bit of ale thrown in. And they must have been everywhere, wherever there were, you know, long distance routes, away from the villages. They must have been everywhere. That's one that was definitely an aged hale house. Oh, said it wrong there, hale house. Ale house. At the head of Silverdale. You've got the old Pacos route that came over from Deepdale over to Halton Gill, over Horsehead Pass, and then over again to here, down to Stainforth on the way on. And the pub in Stainforth, the Craven Heifer, used to be it was called the Pacos. It was a major route, and that was, and you get all the little folds there where they would have just turned the ponies out at night. So that's an example of one. That's another one. Winterings is a little hamlet way up on the tops above Gunnerside, on the north side of the valley. It's a dead end, very, very steep, dead end road. And this wonderful building, again, stuck in a series of enclosures, obviously been thatched, in a very sad condition, was the Drover's Inn. Goodness knows when it shut down. Or goodness knows when it, you know, how long it operated. I have no idea. And another one, High Dyke. This is on what is called Lady Anne's Highway, that goes, you know, high up above Malastown. And there are several old sites there. There's High Dyke, there's Highway, and there's Horse Paddock, which were all edge alehouses. And the old road, because the road down in the valley there, down through Malastown, is relatively modern, 18, it's basically turnpike road. This is the road coming past here. And again, you've got little enclosures below the alehouse where they just turn the stock out, the ponies out at night, the Pagos ponies at night. And going inside it, now it's a real hodgepodge of architectural styles, really crude building. And you would literally have got your doss. No bed linen there, no maids, just a basic doss, bit of gruel and a bit of ale. And a bit of gossip as well, no doubt. A Bauhaus, which is another category of alehouse, that's the definition. Again, a private house that only had sort of temporary licences for specific periods. If there was a fair on, a sheep fair or a horse fair or a cattle fair, then you could open up your own house as an alehouse simply by putting something over the door to indicate to people, come in, you can have a drink and possibly a bite to eat, but mainly a drink in there. So when they had the fairs in Malham, there must have been loads of Bauhauses open. Anybody on the main where exactly was the sheep fair in Malham? Where did they hold it? On the main street? By the listers. There must have been several of these Bauhauses operating at that time. And a couple of examples. There's one that you will all have passed umpteen times, maybe never notice. It's coming up soon, don't worry. I thought it was coming up there. No, it is coming up, don't worry. A word or six on licensing regulations. In the medieval period, the only thing they were concerned about was price and quality. Didn't care whether your tankard was full or half empty, it was price and quality. And this was something from the Bolton Priory Cartulary. Not dated, as many of the things are. But James of Eshton, just down the road there, was hauled up before their lordships, and he was accused as hevisi fract, asisam hevisium fractum. What does the middle word mean? Beer. The Spanish word is almost the same, isn't it? Cerveza. Fractum broke asisam the size. It was hauled up for breaking the size of ale. And if you go through Manor Court records, or the assizes, it is such a common occurrence It just occurs time and time and time again. Alehouse keepers are hauled up for breaking the assize of ale. In other words, they were either trying to sell it to at too high a price, which is unlikely because people would to pay, would they? So probably they were watering it down. It didn't meet the quality standard set. In 1564, the bylaw greaves of... Because we didn't have a manor court, it had bylaw greaves. They issued a pain, a kind of edict in 1564, quote, that no alehouse keeper shall keep in their house any person or persons eating or drinking in time of divine service. If anybody was caught eating or drinking in an alehouse during divine service, they were fined 6 shillings and 8 pence each. The drinker, each drinker, and the alehouse keeper were fined 6 shillings and 8 pence. That translates into modern values at £85 plus. And like I say, it is so common to find alehouse keepers in trouble. In fact, there was a chap, I'm going to come back to him later, but a chap called James Ryther, who was the Lord of the Manor at Harewood, or Harewood, however you pronounce it, in the late 16th century. And he wrote in one of his letters, I'm going to come back to this, this is talking about, he came on a journey through Craven, actually, and he says here, the sizes, in other words, the sizes of bread and drink, are not kept, that I can see, in any parts of the county. Alehouses were, quote, the hackers of all rules and harbourers of our worst disposed persons. So, if you went in an alehouse, you are not a nice person. Whereas, this is a very different way of looking at an alehouse. This is William Blake, the poet. He wrote that. I think it's wonderful. A good reason for going to the pub, isn't it? Yeah. Actually, when I, in 1983, I'd lived 15 years in Africa, and I came to live in Littondale at the beginning of April, which was really stupid time to come from the tropics to live in the Dales. And the house I was living in at the time, borrowing the house, it was so perishing cold, and I couldn't get the fire to work, and there was no central heating. I actually went every single night to the Mucky Duck and stayed there till closing time, just to keep warm.
Sure you did.
It was, absolutely, it was the pleasant and warm. Now, in the 1930s, between the wars, the government set up the mass observation, which you may have heard of. There was something on the TV not that long ago about it. And the only one, they went out looking at different aspects of life, working class life in different towns in the country. And the only one that was really sort of brought together and properly published was the one on pubs. And it was, the report was called The Pub and the People. And it doesn't say where it was set, but somebody's worked out it was actually set in Bolton. And those things there, just imagine these people with suits or nice dresses sitting in a pub in a corner with a clipboard, just watching what people were doing and making notes, and occasionally getting up and just going asking one or two questions. And one of the questions they asked, why do you drink beer? Why are you here drinking all this beer? And those were some of the answers. Beer is best. Can you argue with that, chaps? A healthy, appetising drink that will keep you fit. Just what the doctor ordered. And 52% of the people questioned, and there were a lot of them, said that they believed that beer actually had beneficial effects for your health. Now, do you think that's daft?
Well, Hogarth did the two paintings, a gin palace,
yes,
and a beer house, and the healthy people in the beer house and the gin,
yes,
those throwing babies at...
Yes. Yeah. I mean, do you know that in the days when they used to collect urine for the tanning industry in the cities, they would only take poor people's urine because the rich people's urine was just polluted with gin and it was no good for tanning leather.
Water wasn't healthy, was it?
No, it wasn't. He wasn't. That's why they drank small beer. I looked at it in one of these sort of botanical medical dictionary under Humulus lupulus. And these are the properties that it gives for hops.
Is that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 9. I copied 9 properties of hops. It improves your appetite. It promotes your sleep. That's certainly true. Clears nausea. Reduces tension. That's true. Rich in vitamin C and B. Helps to cure urinary tract infections. Improves your digestion. That's certainly true. Relieves irritable bowel syndrome. I've never had it, so I don't know. And this one I find a bit hard. It relieves headaches. So, benefits to health. You know, it's not as daft as it sounds. I'm going to come back to this later as well. Now, 1577, Lord Burghley was Queen Elizabeth's right-hand man, very upright gentleman, and he ordered inventory right across the nation of alehouses, inns and taverns, because he wanted to impose a levy. And I bet this went down really well in Malham and Settle and wherever else. There was one reason he imposed that levy on drinking establishments. It was because Dover Harbour needed extensive repairs. That's just an aside. A few stats there, 1577, that just, you know, just puts them in perspective, doesn't it? 15,000 odd alehouses for the ordinary men. 2,000 plus inns for the travellers, the travellers with something in their pocket, and 339 taverns. Taverns were an urban thing. Again, you wouldn't get your ordinary Joe going into a tavern. That sort of puts into perspective. James Ryder again. He wrote this. He wrote letters to Lord Burghley when he was Lord of the Manor. And incidentally, he died. He spent his last 5 or 6 years in the Fleet prison, you know, the debtors' prison. He died in there, actually. And before he was in the Fleet, he was in Newgate jail. And he wrote several letters before he went into jail. And he wrote 2 letters or 3 letters while he was in jail to Burghley. And they're quite creepy when you read them. They really are quite creepy. And in one of them, he was talking about the same one I read out before, talking about, you know, the horrors of drinking in Yorkshire, and he wrote that. Just read it. See if you can understand it.
Resin to me.
What's it mingled with?
Resin.
Resin, yeah.
From pine shoots.
And in some parts with
urine.
The V and the R are interchangeable. We're interchangeable. Some parts with urine. Yeah. And they're drinking ordinarily. Mind you, he comes over as a really cantankerous sod. He really does. And nothing to do with pubs, but on the Yorkshire gentry, he wrote, "By the remiss education of indiscreet parents, they fall to rude pastimes before they learn civil behaviour." That's what's going on in Yorkshire. And on the peasantry of Yorkshire, he said he wasn't born, he was actually born in Kent. Comparing the peasants of Yorkshire with the peasants of Hertfordshire for some reason, he said, "Yorkshire peasants are downright lazy." Well, that's what he saw, that's what he observed. Breaking the signs of ale, sure then. The first real act to try and regulate it came in 1619. Best ale went to the penny. They weren't allowed to sell tobacco, which must have been nice. Mind you, tobacco at that time was horrendously expensive. And they were forbidden from using a jug or a cup. What did a proper ale quart look like? Well, I had the joy and the pleasure and the delight of finding one when I was excavating, of all things, a lime kiln. And there it is. And there was only one little tiny nick out of it. Now, otherwise it was complete. And that was an official assize half pint measure from the 1702 Ale Measures Act. And there it is. And that was the royal crown and the cipher, W.R. William Rex, William and William and Mary, after Mary died. And that, when you go up the stairs into Craven Museum, there's a little glass box straight in front of you, and it's in there. Fantastic thing. The 1619 Act forbade, ha-ha, alehouse keepers from serving rogues, vagabonds, sturdy beggars. Sturdy doesn't mean sturdy as we mean the word today. Sturdy meant awkward, cantankerous, stroppy, quarrelsome, or people with a bad reputation. They couldn't go in. There's one thing in the Stainforth pub. You often see them, these things on the wall, framed with all the, you know, no hawkers, no what's this. And various games were banned because they just caused so much trouble. And some of the... But I've made nothing up in this talk. They banned unlawful games or disorder. And they actually mentioned dice, cards, backs, which is backgammon, skittles, and one game. And I have not made this up. Banned... Shukrote. Yeah, potential bet in here. Inflation or deflation. And there was another pastime, you couldn't call it a game, that was perceived to have associations with the devil. So it was banned. You couldn't do it inside the pub, but they often did it outside the pub. And I noticed something in this week's Craven Herald about it. Any ideas?
Dancing?
Yes.
Morris dancing.
Yeah. And another activity that was done outside the pub that was also banned in the mid-17th century by the Puritans, because it was perceived to have, well, it did have, sexual connotations. Another kind of dancing.
Belly dancing.
Horizontal dancing.
Maypole dancing. I used to be on the village team when I was a kid. I never realised it had sexual connotations. Carrying on with the Act, 1619 Act, not allowed to sell ale during the divine service except to the travellers and the sick. Yeah, I don't feel well, love. I'm just going to leave it for a while. Not allowed to serve children with ale. Interesting. Not allowed to serve any one customer for more than an hour a day. That would go down well today, wouldn't it? Put 7 and 8 together. I'm not allowed to serve meat on forbidden days, obviously Fridays and holy days. So it was quite a wide-ranging act. And it's, of course, made... A bit like the mobile phone law, you don't use a mobile phone when you're driving. Oh, yeah. Why there were so many laws brought in, so many different bits of that law in 1619? Because alehouses, you just come across it time and time again. Not just in riotous things, but all sorts of things. They were accused of bringing vulnerable people under the influence of recusants. And that was particularly strong in this part of the world. Because so many Catholic people who remained Catholic and refused to take up the, you know, the new church after the Reformation, and they hung out in alehouses, harbouring rogues and lewd women, encouraging swearing and gambling, and again allowing drinking during divine service just never ended. And this is something I found from the reign of I'm not sure if it's Mary or early Elizabeth. This is a description of an alehouse keeper. See if you can work out what they all mean. It's like school, isn't it? What's the last one?
Slay.
The slay. Kill. Forswearing? Do you know what's forswearing? Or what was forswearing? Forswearing was...
Taking
the name of God in vain, exactly. Yeah.
But what was that to renege God then? What was that?
Kim's biologist, the atheist, famous biologist. Dawkins, yeah. Does Dawkins know he's God? Rather, I did the rather one just then. The 14th century. From memory, it was 1360 something or other. Somewhere, it wasn't round here. It was in Yorkshire, but not round here. A bylaw or a law was passed by the assize. Along the lines of that 1690, along the lines of the 1690 Act, but 300 years earlier, saying what you could and couldn't do in an alehouse. And in that same session of the court, there were 59 alehouse keepers hauled up before the assize for various offences, breaking the size of ale, hitting people, drawing blood. There's a wonderful Mike, what is the wonderful word they use in Manicotros for drawing blood? No, it's a long word. Hubble Cove or something. Something like Hubble Cove. Drawing blood. It was just incredible. A sitting of the Knaresborough Courts, the West Riding Sessions in Knaresborough on the 5th of October 1641. Henry Proctor of Kilnsey, alehouse keeper, is a man of contentious and troublesome course of life, and also diverse and other misdemeanours. He keeps a disorderly alehouse or tippling house to the great disquiet and disturbance of the said inhabitants of Kilnsey. The court discharges him, in other words bans him, from brewing, selling ale or beer, or keeping an ale or tippling house for 3 years. That was the 5th of October 1641. Was banned for 3 years. The next sitting of the West Riding Sessions in Knaresborough was held before the end of 1641. Guess who was hauled up? Henry Proctor of Kilnsey. Selling ale without a licence. Oh, great one, Sally. That's a lovely one. You may have seen this one. Three headless bodies were found in the peat below Great Wernside. Possibly 3 of 25 people murdered by a local innkeeper. Kettlewell? Must be, mustn't it?
Well, Deadman's Pass isn't far over Great Wernside, is it? Or the
Arran
Reservoir.
Yeah.
Deadman's.
Maybe where they found these 25 people, maybe. The trouble is with, you can never, it's like in the Quarter Sessions records, you can never, or very rarely, pin down alehouse keepers to actual establishments, because they just say Fred Bloggs of Malham or Fred Bloggs of Skipton or something. They don't say of the listers. And the, I've got one coming up later, which was a church book. Joseph Greggs, did he invent the sandwich shop, I wonder? He was hauled up before the assizes, before the justices there. That was what he was accused of. He broke it. He was fined, Joseph Gregg was fined 5 shillings for every gallon he had in his alehouse when he was nobbled. And it's 1690, another one, 59 before was wrong, it was a huge number, 59, one sitting of his size, 59 alehouse keepers hauled up. It was a good source of income, mine, for the years. This was written by a chap called John Taylor, who wrote it just before he left a hostelry where he spent the night. And he penned this little, I've got it a poem, but whatever you call it. From nasty rooms that never felt brooms, from excrements and all bad scents, from children's bawling and caterwauling, from the grunting of hogs and the barking of dogs, and from the biting of fleas, I found no ease. And you probably know this one. I'll read you the first line, and you can tell me the second line. There was an old woman. No, wrong woman. There was an old woman, and what do you think? She lived upon nothing but victuals and drink. Victuals and drink were the whole of her diet. And yet this old woman would never be quiet. I don't know when that was written. A long time ago. 1762. This was written by a chap called John Brearley, who was from Halifax and he was in the wool trade. And he came on a journey through from Skipton through Settle and sort of that part of Craven. And he wrote a diary. It's in the YAS. You know, handwritten diary. And on one of the pages, he just wrote this little thing he penned. Obviously sat in a inn one night, just observing, and he said, wrote this. See if you can work out, as I read it, what he was talking about, what he was describing. Get thee from me, yet come to me, for I love thee. Thou hast made my friends my foes. Thou hast made me go with threadbare clothes. But if I get thee to my nose, then off thou goes.
Beer.
Beer. Beer. Yep. Isn't that how long it took you to work that button? So jumping forward from 1690, and the next real, next one's the Beer Act of 1830 that changed things quite dramatically. Private houses allowed to sell ale if they erected a board outside. I mentioned this earlier, didn't I? The board had to show the licensee's name. Beer brews deregulated, a bit like the buses, the number of pubs mushroomed, and that's what brought about all these temperance movements, you know, that came in the 19th century. And I was saying earlier, there's one board, one public house that originated from the 1830 Act that you will all have driven past umpteen times. And it's actually still called. Recently it was still called the Board Hotel. It was done up last year, so now, of course, it's changed the name. It's now the Old Board Hotel. On the main street there in Hawes. And another one that's still a pub that was closed for a long time, it's open again, that's not called the Board Hotel now, but used to be, started its life as the Board Hotel, is the Dog and Partridge at Tosside. That started as the Board Hotel. So that again will date from the 1830 Beer Act. And all you had to do, like I say, was just put a board up outside with your name on it, and you could be you could officially be an ale house or a pub or an inn or whatever you wanted. Going back to the mass observation survey. No, we're not. Sorry, Bolton, 1849. That's why I put this in, because it's Bolton. That was the number of hostelries in Bolton in 1849. What an incredible number! I mean, how big would Bolton have been in 1849? A fraction of the size of today. I wonder which were the foolish. 2 more acts came in, tightening the screws, trying to, like Cameron was saying yesterday, was it? Making a speech about got to stop all this drunkenness and whatnot. They'll never do it. You're going back to Anglo-Saxon times. 1914 Act, for obvious reasons, it really brought strict regulations in, opening hours were drastically reduced, buying rounds was banned, I approve of that. Yeah. Beer reduced in strength there, duty increased from 7 shillings and 9 pence to 100 shillings, but conviction rates plummeted. Why don't they do that now? Like a can of lager in booze, £15 instead of And in 1916, the Central Control Board was set up, for obvious reasons again. And the most famous example of where this happened is Carlisle, which had an enormous number of pubs and 4 breweries, and the whole lot was just overnight nationalised. It was completely nationalised. And I happened to be, some years ago, at the side of the West Coast Main Line at Shap Summit, and I'm not joking, I found a mountain of bottles, beer bottles, right by the side of the railway. In the railway works, and it says on this bottle, can't see it, Carlisle State Management Brewery. Sounds dreadfully Russian, doesn't it?
And they were mouldy places as well.
That was a 1916 Act. Anybody like to suggest when the it was repealed?
1918.
No.
1972
or 4.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, they sold them up, privatised them, didn't they?
Eventually. Yeah. Carlisle, it's had 227 pubs nationalised, 53 were shut, and 4 breweries nationalised. None could open on Sunday, they couldn't sell spirits on a Saturday, they couldn't advertise, and they banned, this act, banned in Carlisle, perpendicular drinking. This is from Hansard, February 1920, and the MP for that area, quote, this was a debate about the act after the war, presumably trying to get rid of it. Carlisle was always a sober town. Now it's more than a sober town, it's a dismal one. That also applied in Maryport, Enfield, Cromarty and Gretna.
Yeah, well, they're all close to the big munitions factory.
They were, exactly. Exactly, you don't want people making bombs and bullets if they're subtle. Right, let me move on a bit. An inn. Licensed in 1729, but they go back to medieval times and possibly even earlier than that. So if you ordered a meal there, it was called an ordinary for some reason. And a lot of them were on boundaries, bridges, pubs, crossing points, market towns. Some of them developed specifically, a lot of the ones in Hawes developed when the turnpike was rerouted through Hawes rather than going over from Bainbridge over the top. The Moorcock was only established when the Malastang Turnpike Road was created. A couple of ordinaries, Spread Eagle, which is, if you go down Kirkgate from the Market Square, where it opens out, where Phil Hudson's got his place, Spread Eagle House, that was the whole of that area was the Spread Eagle. Everything there was the Spread Eagle, and it's you know, yards and buildings. This was John Bing, who stayed there 1790s or whatever. He said he slept in the worst inn's worst room at the Spread Eagle. He went on to Middleham, stayed at the White Swan, which is still there, but it's no longer a pub, and had all that lot in that order. Cost him 1 and 6 pence, and he complained about his bill. And his bill was for all his food, all his drink, all his accommodation, manservant's accommodation, his manservant's food, and looking after his horse. He complained about the bill. That's the Spread Eagle, the core of it. But as I say, the whole of that area was the Spread Eagle territory. Judy's description there of a typical inn, rough and limited. People, you know, you didn't have a bedroom, you slept in a common dormitory. It was infested with rats and mice. There's rushes on the floor. You had to share beds with strangers. Bedding was verminous, and in those days, everybody slept au naturel. Primarily, like baboons and things. I presume you spent half the night doing a mutual grooming of nicks and fleas. But the Venetian ambassador to the court of Henry VIII, and I bet I've lost that one as well somewhere. He wrote in a very complimentary fashion about English inns, saying how he was served with the finest silver and glassware. I suppose if you're an ambassador, you've got special treatment. John Houseman, he must have come across this on his travels round about, when he published in 1800, stayed at the Bay Horse in Ingleton, which was where the post office now is in Ingleton. Said Ingleton, tolerable inns, good accommodation, especially the Bay Horse. But that's what he said about where he stayed in Malham. Do you know which pub he was talking about? No idea. I don't know how old the book is, actually. Not that old. That was an inn, Newby Head, closed in 1918. Courtyard, cobble courtyard, three ranges around it. That was when the new turnpike was created. Well, it was an inn before that, but it developed in its business when the turnpike was rerouted through that way on the present road. Just over the watershed.
There is an old pack horse route, not far behind.
It comes down off an Albury. Yeah, comes off an Albury hill and actually comes down the field, the meadow, right down to there, and then it went across the road where the Ribble Way now goes over to Lancaster's there. That was an inn.
Yeah.
I came across a thing 18 something or other with a list of the highest inns in England, and that was listed on the list of the 6 or 7 or 8, whatever it was, highest inns of England. More of an alehouse, I would have thought, than an actual inn. Too small to have been an inn. I mean, it's got no, apart from that barn on the right, it's got no other associated buildings or paddocks or anything. Gearstones taken in 1900. That one there. This big three-bay building there. When they had the cattle fairs up there, Birchwistle's cattle fairs in the latter end of the 18th century, there was there must have been several alehouses there, but there was one there which must be it. It's clearly been a substantial three-bay building. That must be it. Coaching inns, that's what a coaching inn looked like in its heyday, with the different kinds of carriages and whatnot coming. Huge structures, huge buildings. That was one, the White Horse in Settle, with that being the main entrance. Wonderful door ahead. But the whole range, and behind the back there, if I've been round the back, that was all the courtyards and stabling and whatnot for the White Horse. The commercial, or later the joiners, inn, dates down there, I think it's 1776. If you haven't been under there, or if you've just gone under there and you know, walk forward looking at your feet, next time you go under that arch, go up it and turn around and look up. Look back up at it. You can see, it's wonderful. It's not been altered. And those were all the ostlers' rooms, and the grooms' rooms, and the servants' rooms, and the coachmen's rooms. Wonderful example of a surviving coaching inn, as is the Talbot. If you go around the back of the Talbot in Settle, or go behind up onto Whale Hill and look back at the back of the Talbot, you can see all the really old ranges of ostlers' rooms and grooms' rooms and whatnot.
So was it the bank that was the inn, or was it the what's now?
It was the whole block.
The whole block.
The whole block. Oh. They were huge. These inns. They were huge. Stage wagons, which start from Tudor times, they're a bit like stage coaches. They went on fixed routes, left at fixed times, and hopefully got there at fixed times. And you could just, a bit like these parcel vans today, you wanted something delivering, you just gave it to whoever was going from this pub to that pub, and they always went from this pub to that pub. And one inn which operated stage wagon services was that one. And again, the inn was the whole range, was the whole lot was the inn.
Yeah.
The whole of what is now the cafe and the bread shop and whatnot. That was all the Naked Man. Post houses were a kind of inn. And again, some of the terms, kitted out, where did that phrase come from? It came from the fact that stagecoach inns, post houses, had two post boys who had to be kitted out properly in the proper, the proper gear. And it was the postboys who paid the ostlers, who were the ones who actually looked after the horses when, the coach comes in or whatever, and the ostlers go out and they hold the horses' reins. And you could self-drive hire from these post houses. Flying coaches, 100 miles a day, not 100 miles an hour. Mail coaches, but they didn't last long, 20-odd years, that's all. That's all they lasted, because the railways, of course, came in. That was a coaching inn, the Bell Inn. Got dates, I've come across reference to it in 1579 and 1693. Top of Bell Hill in Giddleswick, where Bob Leakey lives. That's actually back to front, that picture. Inside out.
Yeah, it's
possibly called the Bell. Somebody asked me earlier where was the ale made. They made them on site, and it was common that when the widow or the alehouse keeper had just made a fresh vat of ale, you'd go and ring the bell. And that just told everybody, hey, come here, lads, fresh ale. Go and get it. Another one, the Hart said, at the bottom of Bell Hill, where, what's his name? Russell Harty. No, he lived at the bottom. But that was that's where Elgar used to stay when he came in. That was the Hart said, until the turnpike came through, when the landlord thought, right, I'm going round the corner.
Yeah,
and built that, the present Hart said. Taverns in industrial villages, industrial sites, very quickly. Why do people go? This comes back to the mass observation. What do you do? Why, apart from why drink beer, why do you come to the pub? And those are all sorts of reasons given. By implication, yeah. That's a good excuse for going to a pub. And this was, imagine you just in there, every so often they. You'll have to interpret the laughter for this thing later. That was a pub. It's got the very similar to the Naked Man's thing there. Very, very similar. Similar date and similar.
Where's that?
Blanket. Langcliffe.
Oh,
Langcliffe. Yeah, Langcliffe. As you go in the first entrance, coming from Sutherland to Langcliffe, you go around the corner, it's just there on the left. Opposite the three-storey building, the old workhouse. The Angler's Arms at Kilnsey. Yeah. That one.
The old Tempest, is it?
Sorry?
Was it the Tempest?
No. 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 It was always the Angler's Arms, as far as I know, anyway. Church Style at Linton, which belonged to the church, that was just a pub. Spout Yat at Hartlington, on the road at Hartlington, opposite the Green. That was may have been an inn, I'm not sure. It was certainly a drinking place. The Boar's Head, closed in 1916, which is. Yeah, when you're coming out from Craco onto the main road, it's just there on the corner. The Bull's Head, the Railway Tavern, or the Catch All, as it later became. Opposite, on the junction to Linton. With the quarry entrance opposite. It is.
Yeah.
Golden Lion. Now then, anybody recognise that?
That's at Wigglesworth.
It isn't.
No.
Not that one.
It's not that way.
It isn't. Well, in a sense, it is. It's Selside. That's where the road really narrows, just there the road. You're coming into Selside, and it really narrows.
And you heard there's that glass place, you've got the kitchen if you look
glass. That's right. Jobber's Arms.
That's
it's odd, isn't it? Barclays Bank in Settle, Barclays Bank in England, both commercial inn.
And a lot of Barclays that close become Pizza Hut places.
And just leave you with some pub names. Thank you.
Thank you.